Hello. In addition to Out Now with Aaron and Abe, Abe and I do like listening to our share of podcasts as well. One such podcast for me is Film Spotting, which is currently celebrating its 20th anniversary this March. Film Spotting is hosted currently by Adam Kempinar and Josh Larson with producer Sam Van Halgren, and they are celebrating their 20th anniversary by way of a film festival held in Chicago. It's going to feature a number of films that regular listeners would be well aware of, matching the sensibilities of Film Spotting, and the festival will even feature special guests Ryan Johnson and Koganada talking about their films Brick and Columbus. I had the pleasure of speaking with Adam and Josh about the film festival, as well as Film Spotting as a 20-year running institution. The following is that interview that I had with Adam and Josh.
Okay. This is fun. I get to talk to you guys for a bit here. 20 years, Adam specifically. Over 1,000 episodes.
Yeah.
I love that. What keeps you going, both for both of you?
The recording of the show is still as engaging, as fun as it was 20 years ago when the show started. That's the answer. And there are times, many times, probably every week, at least one or two moments where I feel a little bit overwhelmed by everything going on in my life, all the things I'm juggling, the number of movies I'm trying to fit in, how daunting it is to think about what I'm going to say about these films and the notes I'm trying to take and just all the preparation and work that goes into the show. And then at some point, I kind of just remind myself, oh yeah, but in an hour or 2 hours, you're going to get on with Josh and you're going to have a really fun, interesting conversation. And it's going to justify all that time and preparation. And it's going to open up new thoughts that maybe you didn't have coming in about the film. Some that you land on yourself, some that Josh provokes. You know what's funny? Just even thinking about this, like we just recorded our show for this week last night. And this is a little bit off the beaten path, but I'll still share it. We're talking about Grizzly Man. And I had just prepared all my notes and thought I was ready for the review. And then it was about 45 minutes before we were recording. And for whatever reason, I started just thinking about the film again. And I started thinking about what I was going to say about it. It was almost like I was visualizing the conversation in my head before we were about to have it. And the process of doing that opened up what I thought ultimately was the best thought I had about the film Grizzly Man. Like, it wasn't in my notes. It wasn't in my notes until in my head I was sort of having a pretend conversation with Josh that something came out of that just even before we got on the mics. And then we were able to talk about it and really dig in to the film. So there's just something about the point there is there's something about it not just being the solitary experience of watching a film and then getting your thoughts down on paper or on audio or video, whatever it might be. It's always been about sharing those thoughts and getting a reaction from another person and seeing where that goes. And then knowing that also we've got the audience on the other side, who's the next set of ears. And they're also going to share their thoughts. And it's just going to kind of keep the dialogue going. That's it for me.
Yeah, I think for me, it's interesting. We're talking to you, you know, on a Wednesday morning. So we usually record Tuesday nights. So we just did, as Adam said last night. I think what keeps me going is that morning after recording where I realize, man, that was fun. And if you could still have that, you know, every week, then it's going to gear you up for the next week because it is a lot of work. I mean, we both have full-time jobs outside of this and busy families. And, you know, as you yourself know, it's, you know, it's a lot of work to do this every week, to Adam's point, to be prepared in a way that we demand of ourselves and not just, you know, hop on the mic and press record and wing it, but to bring something that is deserving of the listener's time every week. So that takes a lot of preparation. And there are times where, you know, it's like, boy, I wish I just didn't have anything, any work of any kind to do this weekend, but we're recording Tuesday night. And so then it can start to feel like, okay, got to get ready. But I think then even in the preparation, you start to get that passion, that enthusiasm for thinking about movies that way. And at some point during the Tuesday night recording, you just forget about all the hassle or the time management that might have had to go into it. And you just get lost in the conversation and you realize, well, this is what it's like to go see a movie with friends and then go out afterwards and just mix it up about what you just saw, you know, and you're getting that experience every week. It's like, I'm glad I've got this on my calendar because otherwise it might not happen. And then, yeah, that Wednesday morning, usually you get the feeling of that was great. Can't wait to do it again.
You don't know how in simpatico I feel about those opinions right there. That's exactly having done a podcast myself for Jesus over a decade. It's like, yeah, the fact that you're continuing to have fun, that's a primary drive right there. But also, yeah, satisfaction that comes from knowing what you've got into based on a discussion that you didn't necessarily know where you're going to go with it. Mm-hmm. As mentioned, as the theme of the thing is 20 years in, how does it feel to be in the kind of elder statesman of the format of podcasting?
Yeah, I suppose it's never great to feel old, but at this point, I think Josh and I have accepted where we're at in our personal lives and also professionally as podcasters. Look, the thing that ultimately does set us apart is our longevity and is our consistency. And so I embrace that. You can do the math. 20 years, 50 episodes a year, essentially, comes out to 1,000. That's where we're at. That's almost never taking a week off over 20 years and trying our best to consistently turn out the same quality of show, to put in the same level of preparation, to never make it feel to a listener like, oh, well, they kind of phoned that episode in. We try to make sure we never do that. I've now gotten derailed on where I was going back to. What was the start of the questionnaire?
Just how it feels to be kind of in a book. But I mean, you're like, the show predates iTunes, which is
right.
Wild and so to think about.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like I said, I think that is our, I relish actually that's what sets us apart, is that we've been doing it as long as we have and hopefully as consistently as we have. That would be the key.
For sure.
You might think the elder statesman thing would be, you know, maybe dispiriting, but to Adam's point, once you have kids who are out of college,
I admire the elder statesman. That's why I said elder statesman, not old. I didn't say
exactly. Exactly. But we're definitely, with kids out of college, you're in that space in many areas of your life. So it kind of feels like, yeah, this is right. And at the same time, you know, you don't want to stand on that or sit still on that. So doing something like the fest is energizing. This is something new for us, thinking about, you know, what the show looks like moving ahead and the new movies and the young filmmakers that are putting out exciting stuff. You know, that all keeps you young, I would say.
I want to talk about the festival. You have films such as Brick, Tangerine, Take Shelter, Columbus. What is it about these films? Why are these the inaugural films for the film festival?
Yeah, we wanted it to be reflective of the show's history. We wanted, when our audience saw it, when they saw the lineup, that they said, that feels right. That all makes sense. These are films that have been essential to the show over the past 20 years. And they feel like, maybe in a lot of cases, they've been discoveries, not just for us, but been discoveries for the listeners. And that's what drove it, was, you know, what feels to us the most essentially like Film Spotting. And we came back to the marathons. We came back to the Golden Brick, and we thought about the Pantheon. And so we kind of started culling together a list, looking at those lists of titles. And when we had to go through a discussion process, and we thought about timing and logistics, and we thought about, just what would be the most fun to see with a live audience. We thought about potential guests and the viability of getting guests that might have nudged a movie into another category. But I think we always knew that Brick was the top title. And it's funny, I haven't shared this elsewhere, but now that I think about it, I could probably find the email. I have an email from Ryan where Ryan Johnson, where a few years back for some kind of event, some kind of anniversary show, maybe it was 15 years, I had reached out to him about possibly coming in. And he said in the email something like, yeah, can't do it, can't make it, but I'll be there for sure for 20. And when we were kicking around this fest idea, I found that email and I'm like, well, he said I'll be there for sure for 20. So I'm gonna call him on this and see if he actually is gonna follow through on that. And fortunately, he was very interested and is excited to come. So that was it. It was just kind of a process of going through like just what feels right for our show, and we eventually aligned on these films. And it wasn't a difficult process, really, Josh. It wasn't like we got into arguments about the films. We had a few other titles in mind, but they didn't work out for various reasons, or we ultimately realized that this may have been a better fit. And I couldn't be happier with the six films and the guests that we have lined up.
Yeah, it was really a dream list in terms of those guests, right? I mean, we started at the top as like who would we love to have, and it was Rian Johnson, and that worked out. And you know, someone like Koganada scheduled right now to come for the Columbus screening. It was like, how awesome if we could get him, and he was open to it. So yeah, and then just a matter of also choosing titles that might pair well with the guest critics who are going to be joining us. So like Matt Singer and Alison Wilmore and Scott Tobias and Dana Stevens, like, you know, getting those people to be a part of it and matching them with some good titles as well was all part of the formula.
So this is the inaugural festival. I believe all or at least most of the shows are sold out at this point. Am I correct?
Yeah, we're two of them are hard to find even a ticket that I might have set aside as a comp. It's they're pretty packed, and then we've got four that as of this moment do still have tickets sold. But talking to the venues, there's an expectation that they're going to all sell out. So that's exciting too, just to know that we're going to have. I mean, I've been to the Music Box when there's been 700 people there, and it's you can't beat that as a,
Yeah.
and the Siskel's wonderful too, but it holds about 200. The Music Box to have over 700 people there to see a movie, and we think we'll be there or very close for Before Sunrise on Sunday. That it's gonna be something. There's gonna be a lot of energy in the room.
It will Chicago always be the mainstay for the for Film Fighting Full Fest?
I think so. I mean, it's home, even if Sam's in Wisconsin and I'm in Iowa City now, and Josh is the only Chicago resident. Chicago is always where it's always going to be from Chicago. That is always going to be considered the home of the show. And those relationships we have, with venues like the Music Box and the Siskel, and that they want to partner with us. They want to be part of this, I think makes it fun. I think we'll always look for opportunities to do like we did in LA. And like we did in Brooklyn a few years ago, we'll try to. Hopefully, we will do more film festivals. We haven't gotten to the point where we're discussing a regular rotation of that, but we'd like to do this more often. I can see us kind of always sticking to Chicago for that, and then trying to do live shows more spread out around the country to interface with our listeners.
Well, now I wonder. I mean, you've done live shows with Down, and I was happy to be at the LA show last year. You have the film festival coming. You have the online trivia spotting that's set to happen once again next month. What else? What else can film spotting accomplish? What other events could you possibly put together?
I don't
Don't
know.
ask Sam because he'll come up with something.
He will.
He
Yeah. I
likes to
mean,
keep us busy.
you
Ever
know,
any thought of going abroad?
yeah. Well,
Oh,
what I was going to
gosh.
say, how I was going to answer you, Aaron, there was thinking it's not so much a live event, but, and I may not want to dig into it too much because a listener, like 4 years ago or something, threw out a great idea for a top five that somehow we still haven't done. And I've always had it in my back pocket. And it's essentially like, I remember the exact phrasing, but kind of like your top five movie related goals or dreams, so I think it connects to what you're getting at because spoilers, one of my top five is certainly going to be covering the Cannes Film Festival, and fortunately we're at a position where I feel very confident and have had some interaction and know that if we applied for credentials, we'd get credential, but it just doesn't work. It doesn't work with our schedules to be heading off to Cannes. every May. So it's not on the radar just yet, or it's not maybe going to be a reality anytime in the near future. But I think about eventually going to Cannes or going to a festival like Venice. That's still, that's still a dream
Oh, for
for
sure.
me.
I get that. And now that, most of the kids are grown, so at least they can
Yes.
watch the others.
You hope.
I've noticed over the years that Sam, who's not currently here, he's had more and more involvement in recent episodes, which I've enjoyed saying because I certainly like Sam as a presence. Is that by choice? Has he just had like more free time? Is he just wanted to? Is he just getting jealous of Josh having all the fun all the time? What's
I think, the fact is Sam at some point realized that he came to the discovery on his own that he enjoyed being a producer more than he enjoyed having kind of that pressure every week of coming prepared to do a show. But the reality is we started this show together because he still is such a great critical thinker and has such good ideas and is so creative that when he watches a movie, he's often really bubbling with ideas, and he needs an outlet to share those. He's got Letterboxd, but he often is looking for an outlet to share those. And so it's not like Josh, we ever had a conversation and we said, hey, let's get Sam more involved. But we love it when Sam's involved in the conversations. They're a
Oh yeah,
blast, like the
for
one we
sure.
recorded last night. Our
He
listeners
definitely,
obviously love him.
yeah, he definitely brings, a completely different perspective, I think, than the two of us. So that's what you need. There's not a redundancy there at all. It's very hard for me still to predict what Sam is going to take away from a movie. And that's the most exciting thing you can have in a critic, I think. So that's great. But it's also, I would say, for maybe the casual listener, or even the weekly listener, but that's their only point of contact with the show is just listening to us when we pop up in their feed. They might not realize how involved and hands-on Sam is behind the scenes. So if you are a member of the Film Spotting family, so our, group of really hardcore, dedicated, paid subscribers, they get a weekly newsletter that Sam writes. Sam is on all of our Zoom meetings with those folks. And I think he probably started coming on air more, Adam, when we refined our bonus episodes
That's it.
for those Film Spotting family members,
Just kind
because
of
it
more
just seemed,
opportunity.
yeah, it just seemed natural for Sam to be a part of that because the family knows him as well as they know, Adam and I really. So yeah, it just seemed like a natural thing. And I think it's been a really cool development for the show.
Do you have a favorite thing to do on the podcast? Obviously, there's a number of segments. There's the reviews, there's top fives, and then there's the things with the bonuses, and there's games to some degree, and even interviews at times. Is there a favorite aspect of the show that you enjoy?
That's a really
Great
good question.
question. I mean, it shifts because it's really driven by
The topic
what
of
brings about a good conversation. So if a review happens to, bring up just a really insightful back and forth or give and take, then it's a review. If it's a top five where, we get to learn about a couple movies maybe from the other person that we hadn't, or learn something about them. I think that's what comes up in top fives a lot of times, the more personal ones, then it's a top five. If I had to give you an answer, I might say the marathon still, because those are where we make so many of our discoveries, even if they happen to be movies that are decades old. And those are some of our best conversations. I feel like we're tackling some major films in those marathons, and that's where you got to bring your best work, your best thoughts. And I think when we both do that, they result in the best conversation. So maybe if I had to choose one, it would be the marathons.
That's a really good one. It'd be very high for me. I was going to say a contradictory answer, but it speaks to the endeavor. My least favorite part of preparation, because I'm a very slow, just a very deliberate writer, is when we write our intros, the scripted intros to a film. That's the part that weighs on me the most every time I have to write one. So in some ways, I would love it if we just stopped doing those. That said, when I write a really good one, when I write one that I feel like I've put in some actual good writing and some good ideas, and I've got a good setup, I've got a good prompt for Josh, like, a way to say, did you like it or not? That isn't, did you like it or not, but actually gets at a core idea that gives Josh something to dig into. That's really rewarding. So, you know, love and hate with the intros. That's why we keep doing them though, is because I still feel that it's rewarding. But I'll give you another version that's probably my true number one that's more like the marathons, Josh, and that is these sacred cow reviews that we do, where we take a movie, usually tying to an anniversary, and it affords us the opportunity to revisit a film. In every case, it's a film we've seen and maybe loved and maybe seen multiple times, or maybe we only saw it once and it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago or whatever it might be. And every time we have, I mean, some are I hold up better than others, but when I think about those, I'm almost always the most satisfied with the conversation and what I brought to it individually, with those reviews. And I think it's a combination of things, right? Like, of course, it's that you're usually watching those movies at home and you can study them a little bit more, that you've seen it before. So, you know, you can really get into the minutiae of things that maybe you didn't pay attention to the first time. There are legitimate reasons for it, but the magic of it is just every single time, whether it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre or whether it's Chinatown last year, or even Apocalypse Now. Apocalypse Now is a movie I've seen 10 or 15 times. Okay. Maybe not in a while, but a lot. I was worried I wouldn't have anything to say about Apocalypse Now, or that felt fresh or new or interesting to people. I thought it was going to be the Chris Farley show. I was just going to be like, remember the helicopter blades? Remember the napalm line in the morning? Smells like victory. Wasn't that great? That was awesome. I was afraid of that. And just here again, it comes back to the act of doing the show, the process of having to engage, knowing that you have to bring something to the table that you haven't talked about before. That pressure, I guess, give it, it somehow does, it does fortify you a little bit, at least it has for me. And I end up coming to those conversations feeling like I have a lot to share. And I know Josh is going to have a lot to share, and we're not going to have the same ideas. We're going to overlap on some things. Of course, we're going to love some of the same moments from Chinatown or Apocalypse Now, but we are going to bring different perspectives on it. That's going to make for hopefully an entertaining and engaging conversation. So I, you know, in some ways, since most of the show time is devoted to new movie reviews, it feels like it's not the best thing in some ways that represents the show. But if someone said, Adam, give me your best show from last year or the best show from 2 years ago, the thing that for you gets at the core of what Film Spotting's about, it would be one of those conversations. It'd be Jaws, or it'd be Chinatown, or you know, one of those classic films that we really got to dig into.
We do commentaries every month on my podcast, and that leads to having to do a consistent conversation for 2 hours essentially, and it ranges from different kinds of movies. And I get what you're saying; you're going to bring a lot of different kinds of perspectives, and you have to, because the commentary, you can't just stop, so you have to really keep up a level of information coming from a variety of different areas of your mind. That's a good segue to my next very specific question, but I want to just to backtrack. You mentioned the opening prompt that you write on every episode for our show. I just want to note, we try not to like emulate any other podcast too specifically, because we want to be our own thing. But I do write an intro every week for the, which is directly inspired by Film Spotting. I do write an intro for every
Nice.
movie that we do.
You're a stronger man than me. I'll give you a quick little insight into that. That wasn't a choice. That wasn't like Sam and I sat down and said, let's have this scripted intro that we're going to try to make really eloquent and smart and get the conversation. Like, that was like so many things never planned. I don't know what episode it was. I just know that at some point in one of the first episodes, it was Sam's turn to prompt me, and he'd written something really good.
Okay.
And so, guess what? Next week,
You wrote something even
I
better.
knew that I had to write something really good. I couldn't have Sam write this extensive thing that was so smart. And then next week I was going to be like, so here's the plot synopsis. What'd you think, Sam? Like, I had to bring something to the table. And guess what? That then just became the tradition.
I used to just vamp it, and then I was like, I can't keep improvising this. I need to actually write something down. And then, yes, I kept challenging myself to be like, I can do this better. The specific question I had, because you mentioned Sacred Cow reviews. The show's called Film Spotting. You have top fives. Not in the pantheon are either Train Spotting or High Fidelity. And I searched through your episode archives. They've been in top fives. They've been mentioned. T2, Train Spotting, has been mentioned a couple of times as well. Have you ever wanted to actually talk about in-depth Train Spotting or High Fidelity?
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because the show is called Film Spotting. It's reasonable to assume that we were greatly influenced by Train Spotting. We're all fans of the film. It certainly wasn't what drove the name. What drove the name was more desperation than anything, and thinking it had a good ring to it. And it made sense, the idea of like spotting films, you know, like identifying, curating films. It made sense for us. But you know what? It is, and this has been talked about over the years, but I'm glad you brought it up, Aaron, because it just reminds me, we got to put a pin in that, as they say, Josh, and just make sure that I think there would be a time where an upcoming, a future festival, or certainly a Sacred Cow, something that tied in with an anniversary. Yeah, we've never talked about Trainspotting. It should be a film that we give some attention to.
Or High Fidelity. Yeah.
That they should, or High Fidelity too, because that is, and maybe you know this, but you know, yes, I of course just lifted the top five concept straight out of High Fidelity. It was, at the time, it was the book. I saw a production of it in Chicago, a play that was an adaptation of High Fidelity. It was called The Vinyl Shop, and that my college roommate was in. And that, but those characters were there. The setting was the same. Everything about the conversations they had, talking about top five this, top five that. I said, I want to do a show that takes that same spirit of people arguing about, you know, their top five whatever. And then I read the book and I knew that that was going to be a segment on the show. Yeah. So both of them, you're right. Especially being a Chicago movie too. High Fidelity should get some love.
I have two more questions. I was revisiting, I only have time to listen to so many podcasts, but I was, you know, listening to some things I specifically remembered from your guys' show over the years. And there was a point where, you talked about At the Movies at one point and how the later incarnation of it and how it was kind of dispiriting to hear their regards to certain things. That's not my focus of my question. My focus here is you guys, this podcast is, given the popularity of it and the, you know, the amount of listeners you get and what have you, I feel like you do have an influence on the way people can want to track cinema as far as how their regard is towards not just new cinema, but cinema history, just in how, like, having a critical eye towards it. How does it feel to know you're being additive in that way? Like, it's one thing to go to film school or whatnot, but on a weekly basis, you can listen to a podcast that is as smart and challenging as Film Spotting. I mean that very much as a compliment, and know that you are influencing a culture, you know, a future culture that would want to also similarly explore film in some way.
I try not to think about that.
Yeah.
And that's the truth, honestly. I mean, it's the work itself that's, you know, doing the criticism that really drives this. And then, though we're always mindful of our audience and involve them in so many ways, you know, not worry about the reception in the sense of, you know, what your influence is going to be to that degree. And I don't know, maybe that comes from, you know, when I got my start as a critic, it was at a newspaper where, I mean, maybe a letter to the editor every once in a while would respond to what I wrote. But otherwise, you were kind of in your own bubble. And so that's the mentality. And you don't really think about, you know, the responses to a degree. Now, obviously, that's changed with the internet and interactivity with listeners and readers, even, and social media. It's a completely different landscape. So you have to be aware of what the responses are. But yeah, in terms of anything beyond immediate responses to a show, I don't think it'd be healthy to give too much thought to that.
Josh is 100% correct. But you know, I will say, I think we both feel a lot of pride in the fact that when we do get feedback or people talk about their relationship to the show and their relationship to film because of the show, it's always really gratifying to read. I mean, I hope we are providing a bit of a blueprint. Again, we don't think about this on a weekly basis, but I hope we're providing a bit of a blueprint as far as how to engage with art and to do it in a way that is thoughtful and isn't snarky. Even when we strongly dislike something, it's almost always not snarky. That we're respectful about it, you know? I think that's why sometimes you hear people leave comments and they'll say that it's hard for them to even come up with a time we've been wrong, and we've been wrong both many times, right? But like for the listener, a lot of times it's, It's yeah, but you made your case really well, and I understood where you were coming from, and you did it in a thoughtful way. So they don't think about it in that traditional sort of critic reader, in that paradigm where it's like the critic is handing down the verdict from the ivory tower, and then it makes you angry because they didn't see it the same way you did. That's just not the way we approach the show.
It's understandable. I'll just say from a personal standpoint, as one that grew up watching Siskel and Ebert and what have you, that kind of institution just isn't really there now as far as like a TV show. And obviously there's plenty of podcasts. However, we're talking about your guys' 20th anniversary here. Clearly there's some influence or some benefit that's coming to the user base that has continually listened over the years. And I do personally think that it is a benefit to have film spotting out there being among the ways you can find a route to explore cinema in a way that's beneficial to one's own, path to being a cinephile or what have you. So, the last question I have, what advice would you give to aspiring podcasters?
My advice is always, I'd be very curious. Do you have something you want to say, Josh? Because maybe you should go. I talk about this every week in my podcasting class.
No,
You have
you go
something about it?
first. You've got the syllabus.
I think that I always talk to students about, and I recommend to people all the time, I do suggest that they think about structure. They think about coming with an outline, knowing what they want to talk about. Taking it very seriously, but not taking themselves too seriously, but take the work of preparing, but also whatever you're talking about, take that seriously. I think one very practical thing I always share, and something that we got right early on, just because that was how we were wired, we didn't know better, was, we produced something consistently, and we delivered it at the same time every week. People need to develop rituals around your show. And so when people say, I talk to folks sometimes and I say, how many podcasts are you going to do? And they go, oh, maybe like three a month. We're not really sure. And I always say, you know what? Maybe you should just do one a month for now. Because maybe if you do one a month, but like your audience knows it's going to come the first of every month or the 15th of every month, that's better than randomly, sporadically doing shows. And the other big part of it is it kind of goes back, I guess, to taking it seriously, but be committed to it. Treat it like it's a job, even if it's not. Even if you're not getting any real tangible gain from it, you have to embrace the process, and you have to treat it like people are. We Sam and I, when we started, we treated it the same way we do now, which is like we know people are expecting this to drop in their feed, and they're looking forward to it. They're kind of counting on us. We're not changing the world. We're not saving the world, but people are counting on us to produce this show, and we're going to recognize that and be committed to it.
I would definitely agree that consistency is key. And that's something that's in everyone's control. I mean, you may not know whether you're any good at this until a few shows in, but everyone can commit to putting out a show on a consistent basis. That's huge. The other thing I would say is be way more prepared than any listener would ever guess. And that's the magic trick,
Good one.
is to have everything you need at your fingertips, have done the work, have given the thought to it well ahead of time. But then when you start recording, is somehow find a middle ground where you let that go in the conversation and go to it when it's applicable. And that's something I still struggle with, especially coming from a print background. When I started on the show, my instinct was write a review about it and then, give a talk version. And so it's been a continual learning project of, yeah, that's the work I did, but now I'm having a conversation. And sometimes that might mean having to let some things go that don't come up in the conversation. That's okay. Those are the things that the listener will never know that you had, but it will still have informed, your thought process. And it will inform the conversation, even not explicitly. So, yeah, be prepared, way more prepared than anyone would ever guess if they listened to you.
That's great advice. I agree wholeheartedly. Adam, Josh, thank you very much for your time. I very much appreciate it. I was happy to talk to you guys and get some perspective here.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you for listening and
For
for
sure.
sending us feedback over the years, Aaron.
I'm happy to send feedback. I listen. I told you this before. This is the show that I when it comes up on Friday, I'm listening to Film Spotting. I can't say that about all the podcasts I listen to.
Means a lot. We appreciate it.
If I had the time and ability, I'd certainly come out there to Chicago, but I hope sometime I will be able to make it to a Film Spotting Film Festival. I hope it's a lot. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah, hopefully that'll happen.
Thanks, Aaron. Good to see you.
Yeah. Thanks.
And there you have it. Thanks again to Adam Kempinar and Josh Larson for sharing some time with me to talk about the podcast and Film Spotting Fest. Film Spotting Fest will be running February 28th to March 2nd. Tickets are on sale. I'm aware that Brick and Columbus are currently sold out, but there are still some tickets remaining. And regardless, if you like listening to Out Now with Aaron and Abe, it certainly had some influence from Film Spotting, a very, very good film podcast that is certainly worth listening to as well. Visit filmspotting.net to get more information about the Film Fest and other things involving that podcast. Thank you.